Glenn Ives, how much of the economy of St. Mary's County, where Pax River is located, depends on the naval base?
Sheila, that's a great question, and that's one of the reasons why I think we are so trying so hard to look at ways to diversify our economy. You know, right now, about 75%, either directly, primarily directly, and maybe indirectly, of our economy is based on what happens at Pax River, particularly here in St. Mary's County, and throughout the Southern Maryland region. So I think our community recognizes that you know, we are very, very dependent upon federal and defense dollars and programs.
So you're talking about three-fourths of the county economy. Give me an example of some of the things that people might not think of that depend on the base in parts of the economy.
Absolutely. And you know, naturally, you would think about the defense contractors. But when you think about the workforce that defense contractors represent, you know, they have the thousands of families that are represented in that community, the colleges, the schools that they attend, the restaurants that they frequent, you know, the shopping that they do, the homes that they buy, and all that is all interrelated. And so, you know, as Jill mentioned, you know, this new normal, if we're able to maintain what we have, you know, I think the community would be in fine shape. But there are going to be cuts. And so, you know, to be prudent, you know, we're doing those things that we feel will make up for any of those shortfalls, you know, by pursuing that technology and in these key areas like autonomous systems and cyber and those things that we know are continuing to grow.
Jim McClune, would you say that the impact on the local economy at Aberdeen is of the same magnitude?
Yes, and it is as diverse. You have you've got the people living on post, you've got the people living off post, you have all of the companies that work and live around that base. And so, yes, it's going to be of equal impact if something significant were to happen in that area. But I think both of us are trying to... Maryland is actually really good at monitoring these kinds of things. The alliances that we represent are some of the oldest in the country, and our roles are to do what we're doing and what we're talking about now, which is looking at being forward-thinking, looking at what may be coming down the pipeline, looking at how we can help our communities diversify, maximize the economic benefit of the installations that are around them, but also use those capabilities that are there to diversify and find other economic engines that can keep going.
But Glenn Ives, in the face of coming cuts, how do you diversify?
Well, Sheila, I think Jill hit upon it. You know, we have tremendous capability still at the base, and we've attracted, you know, many, many professionals across all disciplines of engineering and those technical areas. And so we have a base here, you know, and we have capabilities here. So it's a matter of just really leveraging those to the maximum extent possible, attract new businesses. We have a lot of service companies here. So, you know, to have other aspects of industry, you know, even those who do some manufacturing, you know, those things that make sense for us in terms of our strengths already, you know, if we can expand upon them, diversify them. You know, one initiative that's very, very important to us right now is there is a commitment and investment that the University System of Maryland and the University of Maryland of College Park have made, and that is a new facility that's going to be built here in Southern Maryland, the Southern Maryland Higher Education Center. And that facility is going to be a research and development facility. It's going to be an academic facility. It's going to be a facility that will enhance startups and business opportunities. It will host a autonomous system, unmanned system institute. It will be adjacent to an autonomous system test site. You know, so those are the kind of things I think that hold a lot of promise, and that, you know, that, as Jill mentioned, you know, will allow us to, you know, to be forward thinking, to diversify and not be so reliant, you know, on one aspect of the economy, which right now is federal and defense.
Jill, what do you say to people who say, actually, the defense cut should be even deeper? You may have seen the letter to the editor in The Sun from the activist Max Obuchevsky, saying there are weapon systems that are being untouched that ought to be cut deeper. We should be saving more. How do you respond to that?
I think any large organization has inefficiencies, and I think someone challenging the Department of Defense and all of us contractors to take a hard look at what we're doing. We are using taxpayer money, and we should be prudent about that taxpayer money. And to the extent that we can become more efficient, we can use innovation and technology to be smarter, do more with less people and less assets. I think that's a legitimate question. However, I think we would argue you need to give DOD and all of us time to do that. And if we go into a situation where we're going to just make dramatic cuts very quickly, there's a lot of us that are very concerned that the ability to maintain the technological innovation necessary to keep up with those around the world could put the U.S. at a disadvantage.
Sheila, can I make one comment about that?
Sure.
So just kind of tagging on to what Jill just mentioned, you know, most of us, you know, whether we started in the defense industry or migrated to it, you know, we're like any other industry. You know, you have a lot of very professional people dedicated to, you know, to a certain mission. The one thing that really stands out to many of us, particularly those of us who before we came to the industry, we were actually serving in uniform. And what attracted us to the industry is the fact that we would still be able to be a part of that mission that we were part of when we were in uniform, is that we certainly understand, you know, finding efficiencies, finding savings, particularly when we have a national debt crisis that we currently have. But what the question that many of us ask is, you know, what is driving some of these cuts? You know, are they really sensible cuts? Are they really well thought out? Do they match up with our security strategy that we have? Or are they being driven primarily arbitrarily, strictly by budget concerns and strictly by budget numbers? And I think that the truth is probably closer to the latter. And so, you know,
and you feel that way not just about the sequester cuts, but about the latest cuts proposed in the Obama budget?
I do. I think there's a lot of pressure, obviously, you know, to deal with, you know, our federal budget and our national debt. And I think that is driving those cuts more than what our national security really truly needs to be. And so if we can just do a thoughtful, deliberative process where we truly identify what our strategy requirements are and match up, you know, our defense spending and defense commitments to that, I think we'll find that we'll still find savings. We'll still find reductions, but we'll do it in a way that's very plausible, helpful, and doesn't take away from our national security. And because right now, I think many of the leaders in the military and in defense, they feel like their hands are tied because sequester, particularly, forces them to make cuts across the board and not make cuts where they think really make sense, you know, that don't have maybe quite an impact on our security. And to have that, you know, to have that arbitrarily set, I think is adverse. It's adverse to, you know, to our security.
I take your point. I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you both.
You bet.
Thank you.